careers completely, just after this.
I'm Sean Keaveney, and I'm hosting a new travel show that's going nowhere.
And you get off the aeroplane and your skin starts to sting like it's...
Blister.
It looks like it's been slapped.
Some of my friends, including Sarah Kendall, Deliso Chiponda and Guy Garvey, are going to try and convince me to visit their favourite place on the planet.
And unexpectedly, a 50-foot inflatable rat appeared out the back.
Level of positivity, people are very patient, we're poor but happy.
If you love the idea of travelling around the world, but like me, you think it sounds like a bit of a faff, tune in to Your Place or Mine on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds, beginning on Thursday night at 11.
Now on Radio 4, Andrew Maxwell continues his series investigating the ever-changing world of work. This week, the nation's appetite for retraining.
Hello, I'm Andrew Maxwell, and welcome back to my new Radio 4 series about jobs and the world of work. Once again, you find me in my office. Shed. Just sitting here, surrounded by accumulated bric-a-brac. With a mattress turned up on its side, don't know why that's there. What was that? What is it? That's a foosball table. That's where it went to. Anyway, this is where I work when I'm not on stage. It's also where I spent a lot of time during the COVID lockdowns, watching the whole of live stand-up comedy collapse around me, wondering whether I should really do something different. You know, grab the nettle and retrain.
I've no qualifications. I can't retrain because I'm not trained.
So that's what we're talking about this week. Retraining and a nationwide trend for people changing their careers. And, you know, doing something different.
Obviously, the last 2 years, a lot of people retrained. You know, we know this. A lot of people retrained online. Retrained online as experts in virology. Oh, what a 2 years we've lived through. People banging on about virology. Oh my God. And making money out of it as well. Hustlers. You know? And if they were male, they tend to be gym dudes. Gym dudes, you know what I mean? Hey, I wouldn't put any of that into my body. Yeah. What are you talking about, you massive puffed up lunatic? Or on the other side of the gender divide, it was wealthy older women. You know, rich older women who'd fallen down the wellness hole. You know what I mean? Air has memories. Oh, God. Oh, dear God. It was the parody of esteem that the internet claims. This is the brave new world of the internet. We're all equal online. We all demand parity of esteem. No! That's not how you can have a debate about a national and global health emergency. Not everybody's equal while discussing virology. Over here, we've got the Oxford top professor of virology. She's won every award there is in the world of virology. She's won every bell and whistle in virology. They call her Lady Virology. And over here's Kevin. Kevin is a forklift truck driver who scrolled through something on his phone while having a poo in a port-a-loo this morning. No. Some people changed, though, in the last 2 years. Some people became heroes in my eyes. The leading conspiracy nut in Ireland is Jim Corr. You remember Jim. He's the male member of 90s family band sensation The Corrs. Very famous in Ireland for his unhinged opinions. And there was an anti-mask rally in the first couple of months of the whole damn thing. And there was about 100 people all shouting and coughing all over each other and waving flags and whatnot. This is before we even had a vaccine, right? Jim Corr couldn't make it himself, but he was there on Twitter, whipping them up. Who came to the rescue? God, Ireland. Ireland always takes weird to another level. Who came to the rescue? Who spoke for reason and decency during a global pandemic? Was it the President of Ireland? Was it the Minister for Health? Do you know who? Jedward. Yes, that Jedward, sir. Jedward swung into action online and absolutely word-battered Jim Carr till he left the platform. It was the most extraordinary thing I've ever seen.
You're a stupid Jim. Yeah, you're a stupid Jim. You'd be nothing without your siblings, Jim. Yeah. You'd be nothing without your siblings, Jim.
This was the coup de grace.
And we've met you, Jim Carr, and your iPhone is old.
There's no coming back from that one.
Well, here I am back at my office. You may remember last week I was speaking to work historian Richard Donkin about when work began. This week, as I think back to how empty my work diary was during lockdown and feeling a desire to retrain, I decide to ask Richard, why do people feel the need to work in the first place?
I think work actually is something that is really part of the human condition, something we would do. If we were left in a room with nothing to do, we would start doing something. We would either use our brains to use something to scratch on a wall or whatever, just marking the days. We'll be doing something with ourselves. And then it's not enough just to do something. Then we prefer it if we can make it a little bit more difficult. They've sort of proved that in experiments with children, the famous ring toss experiment, where they give children hoops and a stick and said, what you're trying to do is get the hoop over the stick. And well, all you have to do is walk to the hoop and put it over the stick. Nobody said in the experiment that you have to go further back. But what they noticed as children became more proficient at getting the hoop over the stick, they walked further away from the stick. So they were making the task more difficult. And people do that. People add complexity to a task and make it more difficult just to make life more interesting. So I think it's in our human condition to make our lives more interesting. And in doing that, what we end up doing, we might call work.
It'd be weird, like, people, everything seems to be in flux in the working world, you know? In the last 2 years, people have genuinely gone, all right, this isn't my class's job, but I want to try a different job. You know what I mean? I want to actually live my life. I want to live up to expectations. Some dudes that would have been traditionally trades dudes have gone to uni and vice versa. This is genuinely true. Our window cleaner is super posh. He's lovely, and he's a lovely lad, and he does an absolutely bang up job. I can't recommend him enough, but he is very posh. You know, he's full on pinky ring. Hello, my name's Rupert. Rupert the window cleaner. It just blows my mind to have a really posh window cleaner. I think it's because, you know, I grew up, you know, I'm from the 70s and 80s. I grew up watching Confessions of a Window Cleaner. Remember those movies? Yeah. If you're too young, you won't know, but it was a whole series. They were kind of like carry-on movies, but a little bit saucier again. And it was all like, whoa, cool, blimey, Confessions of Wind, whoa. And that's what's embedded in my mind. That's how a window cleaner, in my mind's eyes, cool, do you want your windows clean? Ooh, hello. Not, hello, I'm the window cleaner. It's actually Confessions of an Upper Middle Class Window Cleaner. I shouldn't say this, but I actually make my own organic vinegar.
One person's work is another person's fun. I mean, Mark Twain wrote in The Adventures of Tom Sawyer about Tom Sawyer. He was ordered by his Aunt Polly to paint the fence. Mm-hmm. So he was painting the fence and really bored with it. And a friend came by and he had the idea of making it look interesting. So he was his friend was saying, well, what are you doing? I'm saying, really, really having a great time painting this fence. And the friend said, can I have a go? Oh, no, you can't do that. So you'll have to give me 5 cents or whatever. So he gives him, you know, 5 cents to paint. And then the whole procession of friends come by and end up painting the fence for him. So what to him was boring was to them, because it had been, well, literally painted as more interesting. They didn't even see it as work. It was fun. So they were kind of deceived. But we're having this kind of intellectual choosing going on all the time. We always want something we can't have. And a lot of work is aspirational. You know, we're trying to achieve something that we want, and that some of those wants are manufactured. So it's a very, very sticky and fluid concept, his work.
Also, the other thing while researching this and then starting to ask around my mates about their working lives, I realised nobody knows anything about what everybody else does. Most people don't even know what their mates do. People just don't even, or even think about the mechanics of how their job works. I'll give you an example of this, right? I'm not only a stand-up, I'm also a voiceover artist. Artiste. Thank you. And for the last 10 years, I've been the voiceover on a show on MTV. It's a reality dating show on MTV called X on the Beach. Now, as I scan across this audience, I know you haven't watched it. Now, for those of you who haven't watched X on the Beach, how would I describe it to you? It makes Love Island look like the opera. Right? Right? Back me up, right? Yeah. It's absolute toe rags. But I love it because it's young people making mistakes in the sunshine. Right, but I'm the voiceover man. But here's the thing. People don't know how the mechanics of television or anybody's job works. We just go, oh, yeah. Anytime I'm, say, at a wedding and somebody overhears my voice and they go, hey, I think, are you the guy from X on the Beach? And I'm, yeah, I'm the voiceover guy. This is what people always ask me. Are you there? Where? Are you out there in the luxury villa in Mexico with them? I'm the voiceover man. I'm in a sound studio in London. You know, they don't fly me out there. I'm not just following them around with a microphone, you know, hiding behind a palm tree like some sort of dirty David Attenborough. There they are. Chloe from Essex and Jaden from South London. Doing a dance as old as time itself.
Well, welcome back to my office. I've called up the entrepreneur and DIY expert, Joe Bahari, to ask if this trend for retraining is happening in the trades as well.
Has your business, has your industry seen a lot of people retraining?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that comes down from the fact that, one, a lot of people don't have the same kind of job to go back to since the pandemic, but also people who have been doing a lot of DIY and have been enjoying it have then thought, well, maybe I can make this a career. And it is a great flexible career to be in. Certainly a lot more women have kind of retraining in various different trades. Plumbing especially has a great kind of intake of women coming into it. So there has been a real surge, and I guess that's also part of the fact that there is a demand out there, right? Mm. There's a huge demand for trades work out there, so people can see that it's a good opportunity for, you know, for a career change.
Sure. Well, that's fascinating. Why do you think specifically plumbing and why is plumbing having a surge in interest from female workers?
Well, a few years ago, I don't know if you remember this, maybe 10, 15 years ago, there was a period of time where people were leaving the city and retraining as becoming a plumber because they could earn more as a plumber than they could working as a city banker.
Yeah.
And I think that period of time created a narrative that plumbing was the trade to be in.
Right.
But I think the great thing about plumbing is it allows a lot of flexibility. You do a lot of different kind of varied jobs, and you can do small jobs as well as larger projects like bathroom refits, things like that. So I think plumbing is quite appealing as a trade because you can start small and work your way up quite quickly and easily.
It's also, there's slightly a quiz element to it. You know what I mean? You're trying to work out your puzzle. Yeah. It's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle. Yeah, totally.
Where is that patch coming from?
Yeah, it's like one of those like weird kind of wooden puzzles that you get in a Christmas cracker or, you know, some of your weird uncle gives you. Like, you're like, you have to work things out. And I think that is probably also the appeal of plumbing is you've got to figure, it's a lot of like figuring out where's this pipework going to route to? How is this connection going to be made? Right, there's a drip there. Where's it coming from? Where's, you know, there's a lot of kind of cognitive thinking in plumbing.
Yeah, puzzling stuff out on your feet.
Yeah, and when you then get that right, how satisfying is that? It's brilliantly satisfying.
Yeah, it's great when that tap doesn't.
Yeah, when it goes wrong, it's less great.
No.
During the last 2 years, the government wanted people in the arts to retrain. Yes. Do you remember that? It was when Priti Patel was in charge of whatever department that is. There were posters all over public transport. One of the most ludicrous one was, there was a picture of a ballerina. Remember that? It's a ballerina. These women think about dancing on their tippy toes all their life. It is an incredibly specialist field to turn a human body into an expression of music. Yeah? And yet Priti Patel went, nah, you can retrain as something, I don't know, in tech. you can put all that, your dancing shoes away. You can be, I don't know, the back end of a gambling company. Oh, by the way, before Priti Patel was a very divisive member of the Tory party, her previous job was PR in the tobacco industry. So she didn't need to retrain at all. She went from respiratory disease to Rwanda, if you please.
When I was sort of researching the show, most of when I looked into what's the future of jobs, it was almost every article was about the future of white collar jobs. Right? It was almost exclusively so. And I was thinking, what about blue collar jobs? Like, there's half the economy. Like, and as we've all discovered over the last couple of years, the essential part of the economy.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, cat hypnotists and are important.
I couldn't do without my cat hypnotist, so you know. But yeah, they are essential, as we saw in the pandemic. You know, they were the ones that were keeping the country going, really, weren't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of society was pulled back to its bare bones, and you realise that maybe we don't need that many people to make cupcakes. Maybe we.
Yeah, it's interesting that I think there is that kind of division that blue collar is seen as the lower, less professional side of work than a white collar worker. But actually, you have to be very skilled to do this kind of work. And you have to keep retraining and keep ensuring that what you're delivering is one, good level of service, but also safe work, because you're working in people's houses, you're working in buildings where all these white collar workers are. So you have to be delivering a really high level of skilled profession. I think that is very interesting.
I have no qualifications, none. I went from the playground to the stage. Genuinely, I have no qualifications. I can't retrain because I'm not trained. I mean, this is all I know. This has been my entire life, has been a stand-up. This is it. The only two things I've ever done are this and being a dad. Right? I've got four kids. I'm blessed with four children. I say I have them, they have me. And my entire working life has been away on the road, but when I'm home, I'm a house husband, I'm a stay-at-home dad. That's all I know. And, you know, well, I don't want to be a child minder, because my children are the only ones I don't mind. I've got a son and three daughters. Oh, yes. I know that tantrum phase. Yeah? Daughters. Oh, when you're a dad, you'll never outwit them. Surrender now, brothers. If your missus is pregnant and you know you got a daughter on the way, wave the white flag. Daughters, they're thinking machines. They've worked you out. They're thinking machines. They know their dad inside out. They've worked you out. They've worked you out before they're even born. I mean that. In that third trimester, when you go for the scan, and the midwife goes, oh, see that bump going past? That's the baby kicking. Not if it's a daughter. That's her ear. That's her ear up against the wall of the belly, listening out for which one of these goofballs is her dad. The four-year-old, when she was two, we were teaching her the colours. And we had these little coloured blocks. We would get them out and put them on a little table. And she'd cuddle in beside me. And I'd go, what colour's that? What colour's that? That one. And being a daughter, she was just quite happy to just sit there in silence and ride it out. Fully aware that I'd crack first. That one. Colour's that. What colour's that one? And eventually I'd go, it's red. It's red. And she'd turn around to me and put her little hand on my knee and look me in the eye and go, that's right. daughters, surrender while you can. Well, let me tell you, I've learned a few things in my working life of being a dad. Yeah? How to deal with a tantrum. Very different boys and girls, different game. Yeah? If it's a daughter, so you've got a 2-year-old daughter having a tantrum, don't try and reason with her. Ah! Don't try and threaten her. Ah! Don't try and bribe her. Ah! Yeah? If you want to get a 2-year-old girl out of a tailspin of a tantrum, you've got to go, oh, your hair's got so long. Instantly, she's thinking about her hair. Really, do you think it's as long as Rapunzel? I do. Job done. Write it down. Now, a 2-year-old boy having a tantrum's a totally different game. You've got to keep coming up with more ludicrous, who would win in a fight? Questions. Who would win in a fight? King Kong or T-Rex? But it never ends. You've got to come up with ever more ridiculous, complex. Another one. Who would win in a fight between the Incredible Hulk and a passive-aggressive older woman who only ever wanted you for your body? I think we all know the answer. Who else has retrained in my life? There's a buddy of mine. He actually left the city of London during the lockdown. He became a dog breeder. And he's loving it. He's a dog breeder now. And I have to say, he's making as much money as he did in the city. Because dogs, like, this is, I bought my family a dog. It was a wedding present. I bought them a dog. My wife had never had a dog growing up, so she'd always wanted a dog. So as a token of love, I bought her a dog. And anytime I say that on stage back home in Ireland, there's always the same reaction. Bought a dog? Huh? Maybe it's not Irish, maybe it's a working class thing, but what? Bought a dog? Because let me tell you, back home in Ireland, you don't buy a dog, you get a dog. Yeah? Yeah, right, you know what I'm talking about. You have a family meeting, let's get a dog. And your dad goes out and just gets a dog. There's no shopping around, what's the right breed for us? With a young, you know, it's just your dad gets a dog. He leaves the house on a Tuesday evening and comes back around midnight with a dog. A dog that's already a bit grey around the muzzle. A dog that has a rumpling in its neck where clearly a collar's been recently cut off with a pair of kitchen scissors. I have to say, and I honestly do feel guilty saying this to you, but it turns out that the dogs you pay for compared to the dogs you get for free, so much more mentally stable. I never had a dog growing up that wasn't tapped in some way. One of them hated men in hats. Another one was eternally at war against shopping bags on the wind. I never had a dog growing up that when you let him loose in the park would run on all four legs. She loves that dog. Oh, she loves it. I found the missus setting up a new direct debit. What's the new direct debit for? She went, it's for the dog. It's called pet insurance. In case the dog gets seriously ill and needs a major operation and has to stay in a doggy hospital for a long period of time. Yeah. I was like, oh, baby, that's not how it works in Ireland. You get a dog. You get another dog. We're not running out of dogs. Let me tell you this. This is my favourite retraining thing. When I was thinking about retraining, I live in a seaside town, and almost everybody in the town's retired. I would say most of the people are retired. They call me the kid. And if people are doing a job, it's their retrain job. It's their retirement job. Good for them. Easter Sunday a couple of years back, I went to church. I was there. Now, I've been to churches all over England over the years. And English vicars always sound the same. Like, they always have a vicar voice. Hello. I'm a vicar. Hello. Hello. Big bouncy vicar voice. Hello there. Hello. I'm going to turn whatever's big in the news for the last 24 hours around to Jesus. I was watching the Ultimate Fighting Championship last night on pay-per-view. And I thought to myself, what would Jesus do if he was trapped in the octagon against Andre Galotta, the beast from the East? Would he use his superior reach, or would he take him to the floor and choke him out? You get the idea. I'm sure you all know the vicar voice. Now, I'd never been to this particular church before. And the man of the cloth came out, and he was of an age. He was in his 60s, and he was in the robes and whatnot. So far, so vicar. But it turns out this particular vicar, he hadn't been a man of the cloth his whole working life. He'd spent his entire working life being a special branch cop in the East End of London. So he didn't sound like a vicar. Hello! He sounded like a 1970s London cop. The Sweeney, we're gonna nick you, son. Oh, it's the best sermon I've ever heard. I mean, it's the same story. It's the same one every year. They don't change it. But in a Cockney 1980s London cop voice, I couldn't remember the whole sermon. These are just a couple of the bits that I remember. Like, I had to get my phone out right now. I was just weeping in the back of the pew. Oh, he goes, so Easter Sunday rolls around. Turn up at the tomb. Stones roll back. Hello. There's no body. There's always a body. First two people on the scene, two females. One's believed to be a relative, the other one's on the game. That's what I'm trying to say to you out there in Radio Land. If you're going to retrain, choose joy. Find something that'll bring you joy, like a Cockney cop vicar. My name's Andrew Maxwell. Thank you and goodbye.
Andrew Maxwell Values was written and performed by me, Andrew Maxwell. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.
And there'll be more from Andrew at the same time next week as he considers why we traditionally value some jobs more than others. And one person who desperately wants his old job back is Radio 4's favourite fictitious former Prime Minister, Mr. Henry Tobin.